Fight the power. Right on. Fight the power.
Fight the power.
The revolution will not be televised, but it will be broadcast.
What we got to say?
Yeah.
Welcome to New World Notes, edited by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. This is a really exciting story, well told by documentary filmmaker John Pilger, and well adapted to radio by Lynn Gary of the Unwelcome Guests Collective, then slashed, burned, and canned by me to fit our time slot. It's about an idealist president seeking to bring power and democracy to his country's average citizens. Naturally, he was overthrown in a CIA-backed coup. Amazingly, he was restored to power 2 days later by the common people. Of course, he's Hugo Chavez, and as you listen to this fascinating story, please don't see any similarities to the Kennedy assassination, 9/11, or the coup that overthrew democracy in the United States in November 2000. Promise? Okay, off we go.
This film is about the struggle of people to free themselves from a modern form of slavery. They reclaim noble words like democracy, freedom, liberation, justice. And in doing so, they are defending the most basic human rights of all of us in a war being waged against all of us.
This is Hugo Chavez, president of Venezuela, the voice of the barrios. Chavez and his supporters have won 10 elections in 8 years. He's the symbol of an awakening of people power, driven by great popular movements that are unique to Latin America. It's no surprise that Chavez, with the help of an aggressive media coverage, has become a hate figure in the United States. Because what he represents is another way, and a threat to American domination.
All right, now, Hugo Chavez, the criminal, speaking of criminal, government of Venezuela, offering...
The criminal,
it's a criminal government.
In my opinion, and the opinion of a lot of people in our government, Hugo Chavez represents an extreme threat, not only to our nation, but to our hemisphere.
He should have been killed a long time.
By whom?
And anyone who believes other... By anyone.
Simon Bolivar is venerated in Latin America as the liberator from Spanish colonialism. Bolivar believed that freedom only came when people united against all invaders, no matter their disguise. Today, the people of Latin America are again rising up against an empire built on an extreme form of capitalism known as the Washington Consensus. Whole countries have been privatized, put up for sale, their natural wealth sold to foreign companies for peanuts. In Venezuela, they've said, no more. This is La Vega, a barrio of a million people. Mariela Machado has lived here most of her life. She knows what it's like to be excluded in her own country.
Before Chavez, we did not feel a part of this society.
Soon after Chavez was elected in 1999, Venezuelans voted on a constitution, and this little blue book has become a bestseller ever since. This is one of a chain of supermarkets set up in the barrios, funded by the proceeds of oil. Here, prices are kept low, and on the back of every rice and soap powder packet are printed people's rights under the Constitution.
Does it really mean something to you to see it?
Nora Hernandez.
Claro, porque...
Of course. Because I didn't know we had rights like everyone else. But this one, Article 23, tells us about national politics and makes us feel included.
Democracia, lo dije hace un rato.
Hugo Chavez. Democracy, as I said recently before our people, as Lincoln said, has a simple definition. The difficulty is making it a reality. We are making a reality. Government of the people, by the people, for the people. A society where people are included and are equal, where there is no exclusion, there is no poverty, where human values reign.
For some of his supporters, Chavez has not gone far enough. Familiar obstacles remain from the past, a stifling bureaucracy and widespread corruption. And although poverty has fallen dramatically in recent years, it's far from eradicated. When you drive in from the airport at Caracas, the one thing that shocks a first-time visitor are the barrios, the numbers of poor people. Why is it in Venezuela, which earns so many billions of dollars in oil money, that there still is this poverty in spite of all the changes you've made?
Hugo Chavez.
Que los pobres de Venezuela siguen siendo
pobres. The poor of Venezuela carry on being poor, yes. I always say that we don't want to be rich. Our aim is not material wealth. It is to live with dignity. Of course, to come out of poverty, and to come out of extreme poverty above all. And to live with dignity. This is the objective. Not to become millionaires, the American way of life. That is stupid. I'm telling you this because the issue of poverty affects us deeply. It's most of our daily struggle.
The daily struggle is made easier here. 10 years ago, this clinic would not have been dreamed of. Now, all over Venezuela, ordinary people have free health care, many seeing a doctor for the first time in their lives. For the first time, children of the poorest have a full day at school and at least one hot meal a day. They're learning history and music and dance, often for the first time, and all of this is free. Under the Constitution, the poorest housewives are now paid as workers. There is now close to full literacy, thanks to classes like this. Catering to those like Mavis Mendez, age 95, now reading and writing for the first time.
We never had a government that looked after the poor before or taught us to read and write. There was none of that before.
This is East Caracas, home to some of the wealthiest people on earth and what they call here the middle class. I dropped in on John Vink, who agreed to show me around his grand house.
In the political way.
Yeah.
We thought that this gentleman that's now in power, that he would change the whole situation, because it was a mess.
Yeah.
But now it's a whole mess.
John Vink's view is echoed by Venezuela's powerful media, mostly privately owned. It combines banality with hardline anti-Chavez politics.
Venezuelan TV montage. Coming up, more dangers in the latest official decisions. Venezuela is moving towards a very similar regime to that which prevails in Cuba. For the government, what 21st century socialism means is simple: the total control of society by the state.
I mean, a number of journalists now say, well, there is censorship. They have been censored.
Andres Isara, head Telesur TV.
How can that be? They speak out every morning. They have their shows every day. They speak out, you know, constantly against the government every day. I mean, how can they say this?
Ugo is evolving from a fascist to a Nazi. What's the difference between a Nazi and a fascist? Basically, Nazis murder people.
I don't think in any part of the world you hear the things that they say about President Chavez, about his cabinet, his ministers, the governors, the policies, whatever. I mean, it's even obscene in some kind, in some ways.
Martin Schoeffel, businessman.
We're talking here 1914. Bolshevik revolution, Russia. This is what's taking place here. And if you go now...
wait a minute. Look, we're sitting here in your wonderful apartment overlooking Caracas.
In Venezuela, say, es su casa. This is your home.
And if you're comparing this with the Bolshevik revolution, there are no revolutionaries banging on your door, and none of your companies have been invaded. Your good life hasn't really changed. It hasn't changed, has it?
Yeah, but as I said before, it is now on a wait-and-see position.
His critics accuse Chavez of building another Cuba, of being another Castro. And although he recently announced temporary presidential powers that bypass parliament, he maintains that his aim is solely to speed up reform. The irony is that unlike Cuba, capitalism has never had it better here. At the Caracas Motor Show, Ferraris and other luxury cars are sold. Smart restaurants and private golf courses and weekends in Miami are booming. What this class has lost is political power over a huge oil economy.
Its middle and upper classes are very much biased towards the U.S. and the American way of life.
We adore Miami. Miami is our second home. We discovered Miami because Miami formerly was, you know, it was a village. We were so rich, you know, we went to Miami and we bought houses, apartments, bungalows, boats, cars, everything we bought in Miami. Mm. We were the owners of Miami. And so we are very U.S.-minded.
In the old Venezuela, the United States played the part of a mafia godfather. The deal was simple. For supplying endless cheap oil, the Venezuelan rich kept a large slice of the profits. The election of Hugo Chavez ended the deal.
George Tenet, CIA director, 1997 to 2004.
Obviously, Venezuela is important because they're the third largest supplier of petroleum. I would say that Mr. Chavez, and the State Department may say this, probably doesn't have the interest of the United States at heart.
Colin Powell, U.S. Secretary of State, 2001-2005.
We have been concerned with some of the actions of Venezuelan President Chavez and his understanding of what a democratic system is all about.
Hugo Chavez. I assure you that we tried to avoid a clash with the empire, but it was inevitable. I went to the White House. I shook hands with Clinton, even over the phone.
How are you, Mr. Clinton? How are you, Mr. Chavez?
We were trying to do the impossible, to have a revolution without crashing against the empire. It's impossible.
You're listening to part of John Pilger's film, The War Against Democracy, on New World Notes. Here we're focusing on our oily neighbor to the south, Venezuela. Now we get to the really exciting part. False flag operations, lying, conniving media, a CIA-backed coup soon overthrown by a democratic counter-coup, and the return of the president in a nighttime scene that's right out of the last reel of Close Encounters of the Third Kind. If you contrast what we North Americanos have passively accepted versus what the Venezuelans had fought back against and won, we should be ashamed of ourselves. God bless America. The way I heard it, the Lord helps those that helps themselves. Let's get back to the story.
In Washington and Miami and the country clubs of Caracas, getting rid of Chavez became an obsession. In early 2002, secret plans were laid by the Venezuelan opposition, with the media leading the attack.
Do you think the president is crazy? It's time for us to start discussing the transition without Chavez, needless to say.
Anti-Chavez protesters took to the streets, their anger inflamed by the media.
There has never been someone so ugly and bad as this. Hugo, Satan, Chavez is the Antichrist, the demon, the devil, the dragon, Lucifer.
The campaign to overthrow Chavez came to a head on April the 11th, 2002. An anti-Chavez protest march was called in the center of Caracas. What they didn't know was that there were two marches that day. The other one was led by Chavez supporters outside the presidential palace, known as Miraflores. The two rallies were supposed to be kept apart, but then an extraordinary series of events unfolded. Without warning, the opposition marchers were redirected to the presidential palace by one of the organizers.
Wendy Olivo, photographer. He announced that the march would be diverting toward the Miraflores Palace.
People tried to stop the march from changing course, but the organizer was having none of it.
He responded, "I'm in charge here, so you can mind your own business. This has already been planned, and we're going to Miraflores."
The opposition marchers were suddenly herded towards government supporters. As they approached the palace, shots rang out. They were being fired upon by snipers, who shot them one by one, many with a bullet to the head. Soon afterwards, these pictures began appearing on anti-government TV, blaming the shooting on Chavez supporters on a city bridge.
TV news report. They kept shooting, aiming and unloading their automatic weapons. This will go down in history. Thank God there's this evidence. They're shooting at the people marching below. This is an unspeakable act of savagery. This is what they call a revolution.
However, as this camera angle reveals, there were no opposition marchers on the street below the bridge. What the TV pictures did not show was this. The people on the bridge are clearly trying to protect themselves, crouching down to avoid the bullets of unknown snipers above them and anti-Chavez police units below them. The people on the bridge were actually defending themselves.
It was like a war zone that they had planned and were controlling.
Within hours, these military chiefs appeared on television. They too blamed Chavez and his supporters for the killings.
Venezuelans, the president of the republic has betrayed the trust of his people. He's massacring innocent people with snipers. So far, six people have been killed and dozens wounded in Caracas. This is intolerable. We cannot accept a tyrant in the Republic of Venezuela.
It was all a setup. The CNN correspondent in Caracas, Otto Neustadt, later revealed that the generals had recorded their statement before the shooting.
On the evening of the 10th, they phoned me and said, "The march will go towards Miraflores Palace. There will be deaths, and 20 high-ranking officers will appear speaking against the Chavez government and demanding the president's resignation." This proves they were talking about deaths when there hadn't been one single death yet. It was all planned.
Soon, the presidential palace was surrounded by renegade army officers. Inside, Hugo Chavez was delivered an ultimatum: resign or be bombed. One of his cabinet ministers broke the news.
Ana Elisa Osorio, Minister of Environment. It's finally clear this is a coup. The president has refused to resign. He is being taken prisoner. This is a coup. Let the world know this is a coup. A coup against the people who love him.
The plotters announced that Chavez had resigned. He hadn't. He was kidnapped. The following morning, an unelected dictator was sworn in. He was a leading businessman called Pedro Carmona. In one amazing proclamation, democracy was demolished, piece by piece.
We suspend the members of the National Assembly. We suspend the President and all the members of the Supreme Court and also the Attorney General. And the members of the National Electoral Board, crowd of supporters, chants, democracy, democracy.
In the United States, the broadcast media carried the same pictures and the same story used to justify the coup.
The Bush administration made it clear it is happy with the change in leadership in the country responsible for 15% of America's oil imports. Anthony Mason has our report.
In the end, this is what triggered the overthrow of Hugo Chavez. Armed gangs loyal to the Venezuelan president firing on thousands of anti-government protesters. After 16 people were killed and hundreds wounded, last night soldiers surrounded the presidential palace.
At the White House, the spokesman of President Bush rubber-stamped the story.
We know that the action encouraged by the Chavez government provoked this crisis. The Chavez government suppressed peaceful demonstrations, fired on unarmed, peaceful protesters, resulting in 10 killed and 100 wounded. That is what took place, and a transitional civilian government has been installed.
Back in Venezuela, 3 years of modest democratic reform had been overturned.
Venezuelan TV broadcast. Neither the army nor the armed forces fired one single shot. Our weapon was the media.
But hope had not gone. The truth began to emerge that the resignation of Hugo Chavez had been faked. And the people in the barrios started to fight back. Down from the shanties they came to rescue their president.
This is a dictatorship. Chavez is a rightful president, and the people love him, and they will defend him.
Something inside so strong, so strong.
Hundreds of thousands surrounded the palace, demanding the return of Chavez. Faced by such people power, the army turned.
98% of this country's armed forces have resworn the Pledge of Allegiance to the Constitution and the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela.
Roared on by huge crowds, the presidential guard who had gone into hiding retook the palace, and the plotters fled.
Mariela Machado, the young men, the military police who were inside the palace started to hoist the flag. That made us feel stronger as we realized we were not alone. We stayed there until we saw a helicopter. It arrived at Miraflores at midnight. Then we all knew that Chavez was on board. It was a glorious moment seeing him arrive.
Just 48 hours after being kidnapped, Chavez was back in power.
Hugo Chavez.
Creo que la prueba suprema.
Now, the Venezuelan people, the poor, without weapons, went in hundreds and thousands, went into the street. So I have nothing left to do, especially after that, but dedicate all the life I have left to those people.
As ordinary Venezuelans celebrated the defense of their democracy, some of the leading plotters fled to Miami. And within days, it was clear that Washington had cast its shadow over the failed coup. As these CIA documents show, it was fully warned and knew all about their conspiracy. Washington not only knew what was going on, it was backing and funding the coup indirectly. Documents recently released show that the Bush administration channeled millions of dollars to the Venezuelan opposition in the months leading up to the coup. The money was handed out by its principal aid agency, USAID, and an organization called the National Endowment for Democracy.
Roger Noriega, U.S. Assistant Secretary of State 2002 through 5.
Just because it happened after we provided support to these groups doesn't mean that it happened because we provided support to these groups.
Yeah. Right.
In fact, the National Endowment for Democracy handed out money to groups whose leaders were given cabinet positions in the short-lived illegal regime. An official in Washington explained that this was merely part of President Bush's freedom agenda.
The United States did not support that coup.
President Bush has promised to rid the world of evil and to lead the great mission to build free societies on every continent. To understand such an epic lie is to understand history. Hidden history, suppressed history, history that explains why we in the West know a lot about the crimes of others, but almost nothing about our own.
And this program would not be complete without reading the most famous work of literature recorded in the time between the overthrow of President Hugo Chavez and the time that he was brought back by popular demand about 48 hours later. This is from the third-rate supermarket tabloid, The New York Times, April 13, 2002. Hugo Chavez departs. With yesterday's resignation of President Hugo Chavez, Venezuelan democracy is no longer threatened by a would-be dictator. Mr. Chavez, a ruinous demagogue, stepped down after the military intervened and handed power to a respected business leader, Pedro Carmona. Wisely, Washington never publicly demonized Mr. Chavez, denying him the role of nationalist martyr. Rightly, his removal was a purely Venezuelan affair. This week's crisis took a grave turn Thursday when armed Chavez supporters fired on peaceful strikers, killing at least 14 and injuring hundreds. Mr. Chavez's response was characteristic. He forced 5 private television stations off the air for showing pictures of the massacre. Early yesterday, he was compelled to resign by military commanders unwilling to order their troops to fire on fellow Venezuelans to keep him in power. Venezuela urgently needs a leader with a strong democratic mandate to clean up the mess, encourage entrepreneurial freedom, and slim down and professionalize the bureaucracy. One encouraging development has been the strong participation of middle-class citizens in organizing opposition groups and street protests. Continued civic participation could help revitalize Venezuela's tired political parties and keep further military involvements to a minimum. New World Notes comes to you from the spacious underground studios of WWUH-FM. For more information about anything pertaining to the show, first check out our blog, newworldnotes.blogspot.com. Until next week, then, have a great week. Illa get to my non-carborundum, and don't take any wooden nickels. Ciao.